Pete Feenstra, Rock in Your World. On Get Ready to Rock Radio.
Something's gone wrong. Can't help believing I won't last too long. Won't last too long. Thank you.
This is the Pete Feenstra feature, and that was Walter Trout and Almost Gone from the new Pro Vogue album called Battle Scars. Walter, despite me stumbling over my words, it's great to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here, and believe me, you can stumble all you want. I have been known to stumble myself many times.
Yeah, but you've recovered brilliantly, and you're back recording, back touring.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll talk about the touring in a minute, but you're over in London at the moment, which is where we are, and you're going to start your UK tour in about, what, 3 weeks' time or so?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. That was a track called Almost Gone from the fourth... In fact, the album's out now, isn't it? 23rd of October, I believe.
It's been out for... it came out last Friday, yeah.
So that was called Almost Gone, but I guess we could have played some of your other songs, like To Begin Again or I'm Back... You know, because as a reference to your successful fight against ill health.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you played something off the new record, though, because I'm quite pleased with this record. Actually, I almost can't believe that I was able to do it. It happened really quickly, and I wrote it very easily. Writing this record took me the entire thing, maybe 2.5 days, 3 days.
Wow.
I did 6 songs in one day.
You really?
As soon as my wife said to me, put yourself back in the bed, in the hospital,
what did you
go through, write about that. As soon as she gave me that idea and I sat down and wrapped my head around it, it came out literally 2.5 days.
So that was the lyrics, and what about the music? Was a problem fit? I mean, the notable thing about this album, one of the real notable things about it, is the fact that you've got this lyrical depth, obviously, all these really dark recollections of what went on, but some of the intensity of your playing and some of the uplifting music is almost a complete contrast within the same song.
Yeah,
I think it's phenomenal.
The funny thing is, I'm reliving what I went through, and lyrically it's kind of dark.
Yeah, really?
I admit that, and it is, for me, this is a concept album. I'm going to tell this story. So lyrically, it's not pleasant, and writing the lyrics was very emotional for me, but musically, there's a lot of joy on there.
Yeah.
Because, hey, I'm alive, I'm playing better than I have in years, I think. Singing, there's a lot of just abandonment and joy in the playing.
And you actually did that in a studio setting.
Yeah.
So how did you approach I was going to ask you this later on, but how did you approach going back to your band again and coming up with all this material? Was it hard to put those feelings across to your band members and saying what you wanted from the song, other than the obvious arrangements?
Not really. I mean, I have a great band, and I have to say the band has been transformed by the new bass player.
Yeah, Johnny
Griparic.
Okay.
How can I put this nicely? We used to be 3 guys that worked together and 1 guy that refused, and now we're 4 guys that work together. And Johnny's also like the best bass player I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
And as soon as the band comes in on Almost Gone, you hear that bass playing.
Yeah.
And he pushes the band. So when we got together to do this, you know, Mike and Sammy have been with me, both of them now, for years. And those guys, I have to say, the whole time I was sick, they hung in there.
Yeah.
They had other job offers from other people, but they always said to me, Walter, if you can ever get back to this, we are there for you.
You can't ask anything more than that.
No.
And
you know, Mike said, I don't care who I'm with. He had a chance, for instance, to play with Roger Daltrey.
Wow.
And he said, even if I get that gig, when you're back, I will be there for you. And so those guys hung in there, and that was really moving to me and very...
total commitment.
You know,
I
love my band. You know, we're a family unit again.
Fabulous. Now, since we last spoke, and since your comeback, in effect, you've become a dual award winner. You've won the... 2015 Senna Guitar Award for Europe, and you've won the Best Overseas Artist Award at the British Blues Awards. Now, that, given what's happened to you, that must be the icing on the cake, I suppose.
It's pretty amazing, really. If you'd have told me a year and a half ago that I'd be having these incredible days right now, I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah.
And to come back with a strong record, and I have to say right now on Amazon UK in the blues,
I think you're at the top.
I've been at number one for 2-3 weeks.
Wow.
Haven't moved. In America, I've been constantly a number three, but in America, I'll take that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, for sure.
And
for sure,
it's like to have this album doing this well. And as I heard today that on the UK album charts, the complete album charts, we're at number 37.
Wow,
we're in the top 40.
That includes
you know, Beyonce, and 50 Cent, and Ice Cream, and Ice Cube, and Membrane, and all them guys. You know, Cornbread.
Okay,
whoever they are.
Let's play another track from the album, and this is a very moving Omaha.
Walk out in the hall.
was Omaha from Walter Trout's brand new album called Battle Scars on Provoke Records, number 37 on the charts with a bullet.
There we go.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, you've top and tailed the album with the self-explanatory Almost Gone, and what I think is a kind of spiritual redemption thing called Gonna Live Again. So the whole thing kind of hangs together conceptually as a rebirth almost.
That's what it is. It starts off with Almost Gone. The inspiration behind that was I sat back and I thought about all the days that in this liver ward I was in, there were people dying every day. Wow. Sometimes 3-4 a day. And it was always like I was going to be the next one. But my wife would be there every day holding my hand.
And seeing you through, yeah. Don't worry about it. I mean,
she'd say, you got to stay strong, you got to fight. I'd say, I can't do it anymore. Let me go.
No, it hurts.
I'm done. No, you got to stay. You stay here for me. You stay for your kids. You leaving is not an option. You have to fight. You stay here for those people who are sending you these messages that your music means something. They're sending you financial support to help us with these incredible medical bills.
Yeah.
Leaving is not an option for you, and she would give me strength. But sometimes in her eyes and in the eyes of the doctors,
you had
nobody thought I was going to make it.
Wow, so
even the doctors, they didn't think I would make it. I was a goner, and they all knew it, but they tried their best to convince me to fight. But sometimes I could see the sadness.
Yeah.
Behind
Let's not dwell on that, because you pulled through, you did it, it's fantastic.
And then you asked me about the last song, that Gonna Live Again. That's basically me having a conversation with God to say, okay, why have you kept me here?
Yeah.
What's my responsibility now? And I, in the song, I asked him, and I mentioned I've lied, I've cheated, I've done people wrong. I've been a lot of times in my life, I've not been a good person. Why have you kept me here? And I find the answer in the song, and that's just, I've got another chance to be a better man.
That's as good as it gets, Walter. That's as good as it gets. You've always been a songwriter who has always, you've always had something to say, probably a lot more to say than most of your blues rock contemporaries. And I think it's kind of ironic that it was your own ill health that took you to an even deeper level as a songwriter.
Yeah.
And following that strand of thought through, there's a theme of irony here, because you used to also dedicate your big Dutch hit, Say Goodbye to the Blues, to people like Rory Gallagher, Jeff Healey, and more recently B.B. King. And it's, that song has almost become a barometer of who's still with us.
It has been. I mean, I wrote that song with a friend of mine named Tim Yonigan. We wrote it together in 1990.
Wow.
And over the years, I've found that it remains relevant with who has just passed on. Which of the great bluesmen have we lost?
Yeah.
And it's goes out for them, for their memory. And so it remains to me a very relevant song. I still do it every night.
Well, it's a cornerstone now, isn't it?
Yeah.
As a set list, I suppose. We've spoken about the balance between the deep and dark lyrics at times and the uplifting, fiery guitar and all the rest of it. But you actually put it over a funky groove on this track called Tomorrow Seems So Far Away. So let's listen to that now.
Minute by minute, I'm
That was Walter Trout and a wonderful, real funky groove called Tomorrow Seems So Far Away. That's a little bit different from some of the other tracks on there.
It is different. And, you know, every song on here has a story. I sat down and went, okay, I'll focus on this aspect or that experience. And what this is about is when you're in line on the list to get a liver and you're in the hospital and you're flat on your back, there's some inside info of how it works. They don't come to your hospital room and say, oh, we got one. They call you on the phone, and you have 10 minutes to say yes or no.
After they get a match.
After they get one that they think will work, they call you, and you have 10 minutes. And if you don't say yes in the 10 minutes, they go on to someone else. And the reason you might say no is there are three different categories of livers that have risk factors,
right?
And not to go into detail, but you're hoping to get a category one, but you might get a two or a three, and it's offered to you, right?
Yeah.
But so you're in the hospital, and you're waiting to get this phone call. And every time the phone rings, you think that's it.
Wow.
I was there for 7 months waiting for this call, and eventually you almost go nuts. You're just waiting to hear that ring, and then sometimes the phone is on this tray that they give you the food on. It's on wheels. Somebody comes in to take your blood. They move the tray across the room. They take your blood and they leave it there. And then the phone starts ringing. And I couldn't walk, so I couldn't get out of the bed. I don't know who to call back. And you think, that was it. And I just lost it. And that's what that song is about. You know, it's waiting on that call. And let me just say...
Yeah.
The two guitar parts on there, there's two rhythm guitars and a solo. I tried to pay a little bit of homage to my dear friend, my mentor, who I played with for 2 years, whose name was Jesse Ed Davis.
Yeah.
And he was the guitarist with Taj Mahal.
He was, yeah.
And I based that song on a Taj Mahal song called Leaving Trunk.
That's the one,
I based it on that.
Yeah, yeah. You said in your PR that you feel 17 again.
Which
is a great thing. And you really do seem to you've rediscovered your voice, your guitar tone. I mean, was that something that you thought you might never have again?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not just talking about your health now. I'm talking about actually rediscovering your tone and
your
booming voice.
Yes, exactly. If you would have told me a year and a half ago I'd be back, I'd be playing and singing better than ever and have an album that I'm proud of, I would not have believed you. Because I literally could barely speak when I was at the depth of my illness. I was so filled with fluid, and it filled my lungs and my abdomen, and I had no breath. And even on The Blues Came Calling, I was filled with fluid, and you could hear that. I'm struggling to get anything to come out.
Well, the fact that you even cut an album then was amazing. I want to talk about that in a moment. But we're going to play another track in a moment called Haunted by the Night. In fact, let's play it first and we'll talk about it. This is Haunted by the Night.
I think I'm going crazy. Time moves so slow. I can't walk no more. So I got nowhere to go. Been laying here forever. I don't wanna hide. I'm overwhelmed by memories. I'm breaking up inside. Somebody close the door. But please leave on the light. I suffer here alone. Yes, I will. 'Cause I'm haunted by the night. I'm haunted by the night. I'm haunted.
By the night by the great Walter Trout from his chart album number 37 in the charts called Battle Scars. Now that seems to be one of the examples of where your guitar playing and your tones really reach for another emotional level.
I'm trying. The story behind that song is that is directly a portrayal, not only lyrically but the sound of it of what it was like to lay in that bed for 7 months and not be able to move or breathe. You know, to have, you can't sleep because I have a ventilator in my throat. I got a hose in my nose because I couldn't eat. I had liquid for 5 months. I didn't have a bite of food. I have wires going into my chest. I have IVs in each arm. You can't sleep. Right. And when the night comes, and during the day in the hospital, there's lots of visitors, there's lots of activity.
Yeah.
At night, it all stops. It calms down. It gets. I hate using this phrase. It gets dead quiet.
Yeah.
And you lay there, and there's nothing to do. And I, you know, you got the TV going, and every minute is like 10 hours.
10 hours, yeah.
And it's brutal.
Drives you crazy.
That is a portrayal of what that
well,
is like.
It's right there. So I was going to ask you if you had an overall picture of the song, but actually you're living that feeling through the song.
Yeah, that's what it was an attempt. Yeah. And the lyrics, when I say the IV is beeping,
yeah,
the IV is this machine and it has a pump, and this pump would stop, it would misfunction, it would malfunction, and it would start going beep, beep. But there's only one nurse on at night.
Yeah.
She's down a hall trying to save somebody's life. She can't come and deal with the beeping. So it's right next to my head, and it would beep for sometimes an hour and a half.
Wow.
And I say, you know, the IV's beeping, it's hurting my head, spirits are creeping all around my bed.
That's a great line.
You know.
That's a great line. Now, you just mentioned Blues Came Calling, your previous album. And if you put the two albums together, you're working again with Eric Korn.
Yes.
I guess he acts as a producer as well as engineer, does he?
This album he is listed as producer.
He is.
Because he did such a great job. I think the overall sound of this record, sonically, is the best thing I've ever done.
I agree with that.
His recordings of the guitars, the mix, the mastering, he took great care, he really worked, he was incredibly conscientious, and he is a great producer, you know. He's done John Mayall's last two albums.
Yeah.
And I think he has a big future, and I was very happy to say, Eric, after I listened to the final master, I said, Eric, you are now, it's no longer co-produced by Eric and Walter. You produce this. This is your baby.
That's great.
So he's now full producer.
Going back to Blues Came Calling, the best track on the album was also, I think, one of the best tracks of your career. Quite a few people have said this, Bottom of the River.
Mm-hmm.
That could almost have fitted into this album, couldn't it?
It could have. Because on that one, I really thought I was going to die. And even though the song at the end, it says I cheated death, that was wishful thinking at that time. But it would have worked on this one because I did cheat death.
Yeah, but that was such a wonderful song, such an evocative song.
Thanks.
No, and as a lyricist, I think that was the best thing you ever wrote up to that point.
I do too, and that's another one that my wife, I told her, I said, I got all this fluid in my lungs, I can't breathe, you know. And she said, it's almost like you're a man drowning.
And that came from
And I thought, boy, what a metaphor.
It
probably took 10 minutes.
Wow. Incredible. Wonderful, wonderful track. Full of intensity. The very, very stuff that first drew me to your music was your intense, not just your show, which is very intense, but your guitar playing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to imagine this, back in the early 80s, everybody was playing chords. Nobody was interested in guitar players.
Yeah, sure.
You came over to Great Britain and you had this incredible intensity, and I thought, this is the guy I want to be listening to.
Well,
and here we are in 2015, and you've laid down the same sort of thing on this new album, on that track, which is why I played it, why I wanted to mention it. Now, one of the aspects of the new album is you play quite a bit of harp as well.
I do.
You've gone back to the harp. I mean, was that a way of finding a different way of finding a emotion through a different instrument kind of thing?
I've played harp on every one of my albums. It, for some reason, there seem to be more songs on this album that the harp fit into the song. The song was calling out for harp, like harp. Bottom of the River, that song called out for harp.
Yeah.
On this one, Tomorrow Never Knows, excuse me. Tomorrow seems so far away because I was really thinking about that Taj Mahal cut because I wanted to pay homage to Jesse. It needed harp, you know, and I just ended up just playing more harp, not purposefully, but just the songs were screaming to have a harmonica in there.
Now let's move away from the album at the moment and let's talk about that fantastic night for people that weren't there at the Albert Hall when you effectively made your European comeback.
That was my world comeback, more than world. Europe,
And I mean, the whole house, when you walked on stage, the whole place was in tears and everything else. I wondered how difficult it was for you to actually get it together and play as you did a couple of minutes after. Well, I think you got a 3-minute standing ovation and everybody was in tears. And then suddenly you counted the band in and boom.
Well,
that must have been a heart-wrenching moment.
Well, I got to say, I was backstage there. I had not been on a stage in almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking to myself, this is insane. Why didn't I go down to the corner bar and see what happens? Because I didn't know. Am I going to walk out here? I'm going to have a dizzy spell, which I used to get. My hand is going to cramp, which used to happen.
Wow.
Am I going to make it? Am I going to fall over? Is anything going to come out of my voice? I don't know. And most everybody else I know would go down to the corner bar and give it a shot. Me, I'm like, well, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to jump in full bore. Let's just a nice little kickback gig like Royal Albert Hall. So I'm backstage and I'm just wondering what is going to happen here. But as soon as I got out there and my wife introduced me so emotionally, and then I stood there hugging her and we were both weeping like babies and the crowd was weeping.
Doing the same thing,
And as soon as I counted in that really incredible band of British musicians, I mean, what a great band.
Yeah.
But as soon as I counted them in and we started, I felt
enervated.
I'm at home.
Yeah.
I know how to do this. Yeah. I can do this. I've done this 10,000 times. This is what I do in my life. It's what I always wanted to do. It's what I've done since I was a kid. This is where I live.
Who came out with the quote about the Albert Hall that said you have to pretend it's your living room?
No,
you know what I'm talking about. It was a great quote. Like there you are in front of 8,000 people, but in actual fact, it could have been Burden. I forget who it was, and somebody said, "Well, you got to pretend that you're actually in your living room and playing to about five."
Well, his quote was really funny because we were backstage, and I got along great with him.
We were
hanging out, man. Yeah. And I said, "Well, hey, Eric, man, you must have played here a lot, it's like starting back in the '60s." He said, "I've played here a lot." And I hate it.
Yeah.
And I said, why? And he said, because you can never be as big as this room. You go out there on that stage,
and the
room is so imposing that you can't go out and just command it.
No.
And you know something, man?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, boy. But when I got out there, I didn't have a problem. I felt like I was playing at Perks or something.
That's a great approach.
A room full of my friends, I felt like, you know?
It really was. We're running out of time here. Let's play another track. This is Cold, Cold Ground. Walter, that's Walter Trout. He's the guest on the Pete Fincher feature tonight, and that was a fantastic track called Cold Cold Ground. Another booming blues rocker, Walter, on the album. Great track. Confirmation that you're back on form. You've got your tone, you've got your voice. We've talked about that. A couple of things I want to ask you. The final question about the health thing, I don't really want to dwell on that too much, but it's been said, or you've said, that your surgeon that was operating on you actually played a track from one of your albums, or was playing an album.
They had my records playing through the whole thing.
So it was a succession of different albums and stuff
like
that?
Yeah, they had a bunch of my records, and I got to say, when I look back, I'm thinking, I don't know if I want somebody doing surgery on me while they're listening to some of my stuff, you know. I mean, it's not, it's pretty, I've done some kind of pretty high energy, kind of raunchy stuff.
Yeah.
I would think they'd rather have Mozart or something, you know.
Something a little more soothing as they do the job. Yeah. Now, we also should quickly mention your book, Rescued from Reality, which charts the highs and lows of your career up to this point. Now, apart from your health problems, obviously, do you feel is that like a parallel reality to you now, your past? All those amazing stories that happened in the 80s and...
No.
You feel the same person, but you cleaned up?
Well, I cleaned up in 87.
Yeah.
I quit drinking and drugging, you know, but... I'm still the same person, but let me tell you, what I went through in the last couple of years has profoundly changed my perspective on life, my view of things, my approach to life.
Yeah.
It is profoundly different. That's what the song Move On says. Things that used to get me before, they don't get me anymore.
Let's play that track now. This is Move On from Walter Trout's Battle Scars.
We'll be right back.
was Move On by Walter Trout, and you can buy the album on Pro Vogue Records. It's called Battle Scars. It's already number 37 in the charts. It came out on October the 23rd.
Yes, and on Amazon UK in the blues, it's been at number one for 2 weeks, even before it was out.
I got one more general question, Walter. It's been an absolute blast having you on the show, but you've played with incredible amounts of people, and I've got a list of some of them here. You mentioned Jesse back there, and Big Mama Thornton, Finnish Tasby, Pee Wee Creighton, Lowell Fulsom, Percy Mayfield, Joe Tex, and even some of the Righteous Brothers, I believe.
I played with the Righteous Brothers. I played with John Lee Hooker.
Of course,
Big Mama Thornton.
John Mayall. I'm assuming people know all that,
yeah,
but I'm glad you mentioned
Canned
it.
Canned Heat, John Mayall.
Yeah, which is history in itself. I'm just wondering, in all that time, were you at any point before you left Mayall thinking about a solo career? And had you already started writing?
Well,
back then.
When I moved to L.A. in 1974,
yeah.
I went there with the dream of having my own band,
yeah.
and doing exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I already had a passel of songs. They ended
right.
up on my first two albums.
Yeah. Okay.
I already had a lot of songs. And I had had a band in Jersey that did a lot of those songs, right? But I moved out there to do what I'm doing now, but... I immediately started getting hired as a guitar player.
Yeah.
And it was real easy to go from one gig to the other. One gig always led to another.
So you're always busy.
I was busy. Say, when I was with John Lee Hooker,
yeah.
the guys from Canned Heat came to a gig. You know, they're buddies. And they
yeah.
heard me play. Why don't you join us? And then I'm with Canned Heat, and we opened up for John Mayall. And John Mayall came up and said, hey, what's your phone number?
And
that was that, you know. I mean, so I went from one to the other as a guitarist. But the whole time I was doing that, I had this dream. And the thing was, on my 38th birthday, I was playing with John.
In Denmark.
I was in Sweden, in Gothenburg,
okay.
Sweden, in a big symphony orchestra hall. And I was up there thinking, goodness gracious, I'm 38. Most people start their solo careers in their early 20s.
Yeah.
And I still want to do that.
Yeah.
And I've got to start it now, or I'm going to end up being 50,
yeah.
still playing in John's band, which was a great gig.
Yeah, yeah.
I love John, but I wanted to do more. I wanted to write. I wanted to give my kind of musical vision that I had in me. I knew I had more to give. And
You've given it to the world now. And I think this is going to be the greatest year of your career. I think it's fantastic that you've made it. I mean, the amount of support in the UK alone was phenomenal.
Yeah.
We did the show in Shepherd's Bush. 65 top musicians came out. There wasn't an ego in the house. Everybody was in tears that night as well. And it's fantastic.
That was unbelievable. When my wife came to me and told me about that, and told me the
and
people who
the States
showed
too.
Up.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, there was lots of benefits all over, but I think the one you guys did at Shepherd's yeah. Bush stands out as
well. It was.
We all left.
We all left at the end of the night and thought we couldn't have done any more. Now all that's got to happen is that you've got to make it through.
Yeah,
and you did. And this is Pete Feenstra.
Thank you for doing
speaking
that,
to the
Pete.
Very alive Walter Trout on the Pete Feenstra feature. It's been fantastic, Walter. Thank you. And good
well,
night.
This was fun, man. We could have done more. You know, if we, I mean.
Yes, we could. We've got to go.